This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever done one of those mental experiments or read a book or maybe watched a documentary of a war from the other person's side, from the other person's perspective? It's fascinating. I love this stuff. Not that I try to have sympathy for the enemies of my country, but I've read these accounts before. I've read Vietnamese accounts of what it was like with American bombers overhead. There are several still surviving, as you can imagine, Japanese accounts of what it was like there. So obviously we're about to talk about the United States military, but I want to talk about this really quickly because it explains why I'm so passionate about having a strong military and why I am so terrified at the rot that has taken place inside of ours. If you read a Japanese account of being bombed, you know, everyone knows about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but those are honestly a tiny fraction of how much bombing we did in Japan. Virtually every major city, not every major city, but pretty much every major city in Japan, we reduced it to rubble. And to hear the accounting of what it's like when you could hear the planes coming. Am I going to make it to the bomb shelter in time? My kids, they're at school. I hope they got out okay. I won't know till, well, who knows when. Maybe that bomb got them. Maybe it'll get me. The terror. It sounds horrifying to have a foreign army come into your country and bomb you to powder. And then the training, the fear they felt when they thought we were going to invade, because we were going to invade and if they hadn't surrendered. The absolute abject terror. You're a woman doing bamboo spear training with your children, that level of terror. But that can happen here, you realize that. We here in the United States of America, we have been blessed, no matter how old you are watching me right now, if you're 95 or 5, the entirety of your life, we've been untouchable in that regard. Number one, biggest, baddest military in the world, two gigantic oceans on each side. Oh, we may lose something here or there or a regional conflict. We may get attacked, but no one's ever coming to the homeland. We're never going to lose a major war. We always win those. We're two for two, after all. But that's not true. Every society in history, they've gotten really, really strong. The big ones, they've gotten really strong on the backs of their military. And the citizens in those societies convinced themselves for the longest time that they could never be beaten, that they were untouchable. Our military always wins, but that is not how history goes. Eventually, you send that invincible army off to war, and it doesn't come back again. And you wake up one morning looking around saying, wait, what? That can't happen. How could that have happened? Well, let's talk about how could that have happened. It's happening right now in front of your eyes. How can a military so big, so powerful, so invincible, how could it ever be beaten? Well, things like Afghanistan. An image, an international video seen so many times around the globe, so representative of the international embarrassment brought to us by the Biden administration, the American military waking up one day and just deciding we're leaving, and the C-130 goes scurrying off the runway. in international disgrace and embarrassment. What a spit in the face it is of the men and women who gave their blood and their lives in that country for 20 years. And then it's not just the embarrassment part of it. How can a military rot so quickly? Well, in the military, accountability is everything. And we always knew that. I knew that as a young, dumb, enlisted grunt. Accountability is everything. Succeed or fail. If you fail, there will be accountability. Here in our military now, it has been so rotted out from within by the officer corps, the freaking chairman of the Joint Chiefs will bomb 10 innocent people in response to a terrorist attack. 10 innocent people, 6 of them children in Afghanistan, and he'll stare right in the camera and call it righteous.
We know from a variety of other means that at least one of those people that were killed was an ISIS facilitator. So were there others killed? Yes, there are others killed. Who they are, we don't know. We'll try to sort through all that. But we believe that the procedures at this point, I don't want to influence the outcome of an investigation, but at this point we think that the procedures were correctly followed and it was a righteous strike.
A righteous strike, but it wasn't. They made it all up. We vaporized 10 innocent people on our way out of the country and nobody was held accountable for it at all. No accountability. Accountability's gone. How could a military get so weak? Well, it's also the people you bring into the military, you see. The people you bring in, they're the ones who run it. Kind of goes without saying, who are you bringing in? Well, you see that military, those Army Rangers scaling the cliffs on D-Day of Normandy? Do you think they would have signed up to join in a military whose advertisements were this?
This is the story of a soldier who operates your nation's Patriot missile defense systems. It begins in California with a little girl raised by two moms.
I also marched for equality. I like to think I've been defending freedom from an early age.
Sure, I'd spent my life around inspiring women, but what had I really achieved on my own? One of my sorority sisters was studying abroad in Italy. Another was climbing Mount Everest. I needed my own adventures, my own challenge. And after meeting with an Army recruiter, I found it. A way to prove my inner strength and maybe shatter some stereotypes along the way.
The people who win your wars for you don't join militaries like that. They go do something else. They go become cops, firemen, part of their community. They don't join the military. But you will get a bunch of vile little communists joining your military with ads like that. And they will rot it out from within. Now, what are we going to do about it? Well, Pete Hegseth sure sounds like the right man for the job.
And you're precisely right. The military was a forerunner in courageous racial integration in ways no other institutions were willing to do. I served with men and women of all backgrounds because of the courage of people decades and decades ago. Incredibly important. However, the DEI policies of today are not the same as what happened back then. They're dividing troops inside formations, causing commanders to walk on eggshells, not putting meritocracy first. That's the indictment that's made by those serving right now.
Excuse me.
And why we're having this conversation.
Sounds like the right man for the job. We need him, and we need a lot of reform. He has a monumental task ahead of him because the largest, most well-funded military in the world is not ready for prime time. That's the truth. Pete better get us there. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an incredible show for you. We'll be back.
Don't lecture me about women in combat. Women have been in combat, and it doesn't matter if that 7.62 hits you in the chest. No one gives a if it's a woman or a guy who pulled that trigger. You're still dead. So if you meet the standards, our military must be and always should be a standards-based, merit-based military.
period, full stop. It doesn't matter if you're white, if you're black, if you're a man, if you're a woman, if you're a Catholic, if you're a Protestant. None of those identification things matter. What matters are standards, readiness standards. Do you meet the standard or not? If yes, pass go, collect 200, join the infantry.
But that's not at all how it works, you see. What drives me crazy is that's the argument of an ignorant civilian. Well, all they have to do is shoot. The bullet hits just the same. The life in the infantry is a physical life. Very, very physical. It's grueling. It'll grind you down to the nubs. It's not shooting. Joining me now, Jason Nelson, U.S. Army Marine Corps veteran. Jason, praise God, that freaking guy is gone. They even took his portrait out of the Pentagon.
There are very few things that I cannot wait to see. And one of those things is to watch those pardons get thrown out the door. So Private Milley can spend some time at Leavenworth and, he can talk about equity or whatever he wants as he's working the chow line and dealing with all the convicts over there. It's a monstrosity, what the military has become, Jesse. It's absolutely ridiculous. The fact is that readiness is down across the board. They had to change the PT test even lower to get lower and lower standards to be able to continue to fill the force that we have right now. They made a decision a long time ago to cater the force to the 1% that constantly needs attention, as opposed to distilling the force down to the 1% that can actually do the job. And Milley's just lying, as most civilians do when they talk about forward operating bases as combat, just because we entered a kinetic operations in a different theater that's different than, let's say, World War II, and you happen to have females who were on the front lines. That does not mean that they were engaged in door kicking. It doesn't mean that they were engaged in combat. And it also doesn't mean they were capable of dragging your sorry butt out of a kill box if you happen to get fragged, and drag you out to safety and to be able to do the things that they needed to be able to do. Because as we saw at LA, if you have a firefighter who says, it's your problem if you got in that and I can't carry you, if you got yourself in that situation. Quite frankly, I don't think we're ready for a war, Jesse. I think that we're ready to lose a war.
Talk about that. Why aren't we ready? Because what's startling to me is I have not talked to a single person in currently or someone who got out fairly recently who has said we're ready. Every one of them to a man says we're not ready. We're not ready. But what does that mean?
Well, most of what defines readiness in the military and that larger hierarchy, and he did touch on the fact that our Secretary of Defense talked about how it's a top-heavy organization. And so it becomes an administrative score. There are metrics that define what is readiness, right? So you can fudge those statistics. You can move them into what we call green, or at least into an amber state, so they're not going to sit here and kick you, amber or yellow or whatever the heck it is. I'm colorblind. Point is that if you don't want to be in the red, you can sit here and say, hey, I get all my soldiers trained on a rifle, or I can turn around and get some of them trained on a rifle, and I can get everybody to go watch this video on sexual harassment or on how to keep your cat card and not lose it in the hallway or other stupid things that they fill your time with. The fact is in the reserves, you spend more time in computer classes that just check the box on the most benign things than you did on your primary weapon system. You spent more time getting ready for medical, doing these shots and checking your teeth and all these things. This is what our reservists are doing right now. They're not training to fight a war. And anybody who thinks that our active duty is the one that goes out and fights that war doesn't understand how wars are fought. Maybe that initial strike, but it's the reserves that bear the brunt of this. And quite frankly, the reserves are at less than 50% readiness and have been for a very, very long time.
Pete Hegseth, how does he tackle a problem this big, this vast, the military that is not ready? It's large. These problems are large. The communist infection in it is large. Is it even possible for one man to go in and start cleaning it out?
I think it's about a mindset, Jesse. I think that you and I are the type of people that we rose to the challenge, and the challenge was a challenge that we set for ourselves. It wasn't as though a gauntlet was thrown down by Japan. It's not as if somebody, when I joined in peacetime, 1997, my first tour. I joined because I wanted to challenge something in myself. I wanted to be United States Marine. I wanted to be the elite of the elite. I wanted to push myself. And quite frankly, we've given out participation trophies for so long. In just civilian society, it's actually bled over to the military. I'm embarrassed about half of the ribbons that I've been awarded. I look like a Guatemalan a dictator at this point because, you attended this program. You went and did this stupid thing. No, that isn't what we're supposed to be doing. What we're supposed to be doing is distilling these troops down. We're supposed to be finding the best of the best and setting for them challenges. Now, I think there's a lot we could do to improve the draw for a lot of people. I think that understanding they might get better medical care while they're serving. You know, we treat our pro athletes with better attention than we do our warriors. And if they were given the same attention, we'd probably keep our warriors a lot longer and have a much stronger force. But outside of that, I think continuing to lay the gauntlet down for people, not muddying the waters, not lowering the standards, but setting the standards even higher, I believe is what's going to make our military stronger. And I believe he has that same thought and same process that he's going to go ahead and push forward with that.
Jason, how does the military tackle its recruiting issues? Setting aside the fact we know Pete Hegseth is going to dump all the DEI, we're not going to gay the whole place up anymore, with all due respect to the Navy, we're not going to do that stuff anymore. We still have the problem of a recruiting pool that is not physically ready. All these freaking kids, they're fat, they're on anti-anxiety medication, they're not qualified to go run and jump and carry things. How do we handle that?
Well, I think there's a very simple solution to that, and I think it's this. You go out and find those that can still hear you, and you tell them that, you know, when we don't have a great enemy, Jesse, Nazi Germany, Japan didn't just attack us, we're not headed into some nasty war because somebody blew down buildings on 9/11, how do you draw people in? And I think what it is you inspire in them the idea that they can become grown men, they can become, in some cases, grown women, by going in and experiencing what it's like to have to depend on yourself, what it is to be challenged, what it is to be rubbed into the dirt and have to pick yourself back up and be pushed to a limit that is beyond endurance. I think that those are things that we should advertise to people. I think that there is a large group of people out there, youth right now, who have seen what has happened to the generation just before them, the kids who sat around on the couch, who played video games, who wanted to be social media stars. They're looking at all of this and it's not real. They want to be people in society who produce. And I think that you go after those people by telling them that, look, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be given to you, but it's something that you can go out and earn. It's what drew me in. And I was not your cliche Marine going in. And again, I don't know what drew you in, Jesse, but I think that if you challenge people, people really do. This is what sets humans aside, is we are problem solvers and we want to aspire to have things. And Elon Musk spoke on this at the inauguration. You need to have something to strive for. And by the way, this doesn't mean putting all of our soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen up on a pedestal. It means sitting here and having them understand that there's a culmination to that training, to that lifestyle that leads to them being better members of society, better prepared to deal with life, and that they will be more successful in the long term.
Yeah, the Marines, I went Marines. I didn't even walk into any other office because of the challenge. I wanted to see what I was made of. I wanted to see if I had what it took to become a Marine, see if I was tough, you know. All right,
lastly. You did it. You had it in you, Jesse, Dave.
Yeah, I had it in me, I guess. I don't know if I found out that I was tough, but I had it in me, I guess, to get it done. Pete Hegseth. There are concerns from people who don't really understand how wars are fought that, well, he's never been a general. We're just going to send some captain in there to take over everything. Why is that thinking completely misplaced? Because it is.
Well, first of all, generals were never generals until they were generals, correct? So most people would understand, if they look at battlefield history, would understand it isn't often colonels that get promoted to generals, but it's majors and captains who are out there in the field and conducting maneuvers, and generals who see in them the ability to actually fight the war. Generals are basically administrative. I think a lot of people forget that. Their job is administrative. So when you think about who actually goes out and conducts the war fighting, when you think about the echelons at which that takes place, I think Pete falls right into the category of the people you would want, right at the company commander level, somebody who has experience in leading while also understanding the machinations of the administrative class.
Jason, come back soon, my brother. Semper Fi. All right. Clay Martin. He was a Green Beret, a Marine Scout Sniper, Marine Recon. He's been around a while. You know Clay Martin. He has some military thoughts, do you think? He joins us next.
Our military is more diverse than it has ever been, but more importantly, it is more lethal than it has ever been. This is not a coincidence.
Wow, that is a load off. More diverse and more lethal. I'm so excited. Woo! Joining me now, Clay Martin, retired Green Beret, retired Marine Corps Scout Sniper, Marine Corps Recon. Now he writes books for a living when he's not teaching other people how to kill people. Joining me now, Clay Martin. Clay, he wrote the book Barbarian Spirit, I Should Know. I think his fiction stuff is better than his nonfiction. Okay, Clay, are we more lethal than we have been?
Bro, I hadn't actually seen that more lethal clip. It's a good thing you talked for a minute, because I was rolling around on the floor like, wow. We see lies from politicians all the time, but I don't know how you could say that with a straight face. That's rich.
Clay, why has, put it in words that people will understand, why has this focus on, well, we need more women, we need more this, we need more any of that. Why does that focus, why does it hurt lethality? Because people who haven't been in and don't understand that, they really can't grasp lots of the time why that hurts everything.
Well, it's actually, you know, it's almost like they think for a second that, I got a leg up because I was a white guy. The benefit of the military has always been that it's a pure meritocracy for everyone, for me. Doesn't matter if I come, whatever background, I could be what's the whitest guy I could be George Washington's great-grandson. It wouldn't matter because they didn't care. You can either hack it or you can't. And that has led to, whatever it's led to, but it's led to the best people doing the job, especially like complex jobs, fighter pilots, things like that. Nobody has ever cared about the diversity of that. Now, when you change things, and I actually saw this start to happen in the Obama years myself, and to be honest, also a little bit under the Bush years even, when you start to have these quotas like, oh, well, we have to have X amount of whatever special people in, you're going to have to change the standards. That's how it works. You can try a couple of things. You can try recruiting to a certain segment of a population, whatever. But for the most part, you're going to have to change standards, and that's just how it is. And get out of the way, Atlas. Oh, there's my big dog getting in the way. Once you do that, yeah, things start falling apart. Why did no women pass Ranger school? Oh, Atlas, you idiot. Why did no women pass Ranger school until a 2-star general walked their lanes for them? I don't know. That's weird. Huh?
Clay.
For you.
Did you see this stuff leak into our top tier guys like your guys? Because I see a lot of people will say, well, at least this stuff will never get to the SEALs. It'll never get to the Green Berets.
Go ahead. The first female Green Beret AD'd her own pistol at her apartment complex about 6 months after she graduated from the course. And that's what happened. I didn't go to her course, so I don't know if they changed the standards for her. But I do know this from talking to friends that are still in, because we're also at the age where it's my guys that are running the selections and the courses for these younger dudes. All the old veterans always say it, but for once I do actually believe it's true. They have really lowered the standard and things weaker. So, yes, it has infected us also. And, at the end of the day, too, it doesn't matter because SEAL Team 11 and SF, we can't fight the war by ourselves either. We need a Navy and some, airplanes and some, guys with bombs, artillery guys. So, that's misconception too. Even if it didn't affect us, it still cut into our lethality in a huge way.
Okay, talk about those support guys, because I try to explain this to people on my show as often as possible, that, look, even if the Rangers are still where they need to be, right? Even if the Marine grunts are where they need to be, you need a mountain of support of various kinds behind you. Some of it's firing rockets and dropping bombs. Some of it's just bringing you food. And if those are a bunch of morons, then I don't care how tough the Rangers are. They can't do it on an empty stomach.
Exactly right. It ultimately makes all of our jobs more dangerous, too. If you get some special boys and they got to do special stuff, they got to go grab HBTs or whatever. Well, if they're the only ones in the country, guess who the only target is? It's those guys. We actually got away with a lot in the war on terror because we had so many other, fighting forces, legit fighting forces, 82nd Airborne, Marine Corps, all these guys running all over the place doing all this other stuff that also occupies targeting and allows us to get the linchpins. So this all ties together. The a lot of people talk about the teamwork thing like it's a, you know, a cliche thing, but it really is true. It is all one big team, and you're only as strong as your weakest link. If you have links in there that can't get ammo to the Rangers out there on the hilltop, well, guess what? Now they're going to die. Is how it works.
All right, Rubio had some interesting things to say about China. Here he was.
If we stay on the road we're on right now, in less than 10 years, virtually everything that matters to us in life will depend on whether China will allow us to have it or not. Everything from the blood pressure medicine we take to what movies we get to watch and everything in between, we will depend on China for it. They have come to dominate the critical mineral industry supplies throughout the world. Everywhere in the world, they've now established critical mineral rights. Even those who want to see more electric cars, no matter where you make them, those batteries are almost entirely dependent on the ability of the Chinese and the willingness of the Chinese Communist Party to produce it and export it to you. So if we don't change course, we are going to live in a world where much of what matters to us on a daily basis, from our security to our health, will be dependent on whether the Chinese allow us to have it or not. That's an unacceptable outcome.
Clay, where does our military stack up against China's?
5 years ago, it would have been a bad joke in our favor. Now, I really don't know. Especially because when you talk about dealing with China, you're talking about, you know, major systems. You're not talking about a couple of, you know, idiots with a suppressed rifle in the dark and, you know, get bin Laden. You're talking about, like, naval battles and, you know, aircraft-like fights and missiles and, you know, crazy stuff. I have lost a lot of faith in our Navy. And our Navy is actually, this is a hard thing for us as former Marines to admit. When you get right down to it, as far as world power projection goes, the Navy is the most important branch. And the Navy seems like it has really fallen apart in the last 5 years. From these, you know, rusty ships to, you know, they're getting housed by Houthis with DJI drones in the Red Sea. The fact that they shot one of their own fighter aircraft down the other day from their own strike force. Remember that? I mean, we kind of glossed over that one, but it happened. These are mistakes that wouldn't have happened 40 years ago with way worse technology. The fact that these things are happening now should be terrifying to us. And that tells us that the rot in that service is incredibly deep. It's the competence level all the way up and down the chain. And now I'm not so sure. Now, on the other hand, I've seen China's stuff, and, you know, for the most part, it's garbage. But they are getting better. All right, they are getting better. And if we ever were to have to fight them, too, it's not like China's going to come here. China wants to fight for territorial concessions in its own backyard. So we've always had to be willing to play the logistics game against them. If we have to do that now, I'm not that confident we can win. I'm just not confident that we can get our stuff over there, our sea lift of our major items that we needed to, and dominate. And that's scary.
That is absolutely frightening. Yeah, Clay, why the Navy in particular? I understand you've talked about this, the degradation of really every service. The Marine Corps has gone this way too, maybe less so, but same mm-hmm. thing. But the Navy, it has been startling. And you're 100% correct. I talk about it all the time, as much as it pains me. That's the one we need. If you're going to take out every branch and leave one, it would be the freaking Navy. Like, you really have to have that with the world being 2/3 water. You have to have it. Why have they fallen so hard and so fast?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know. I will say that seeing this from being around the service for 25 years, it does feel like they went to the not only like the DEI stuff, but the Navy more than any other branch became reliant on the we had the superior technology and the superior stuff, therefore we can get sloppy with discipline and incompetence. Because if you go back to like 2000, they could. Our stuff was so much further advanced than anybody else's. The Navy also didn't, except for, you know, like EOD guys or CBs, they're very small land-based components. The Navy never had to worry about anything in the GWAT. I think we all saw that that meme, the fake Navy recruiting head. You know, it was like, you can't get killed at the Navy unless you party too hard. Well, it was kind of true, man. It really was. So they also haven't faced the same attrition, same danger that even the Air Force has over, you know, the last 20 years. Air Force had planes stationed where little commando guys could show up and kill you or shoot a rocket at you, and they faced danger. Navy systemically has not. I don't even actually know when the last time the Navy faced real danger was. Probably actually Operation Praying Mantis, like 1981 in the Persian Gulf. So I just think it's allowed their service to be the most affected, and now all of a sudden it's like they're the aging rock star that's been, you know, he's been the awesome guy, but he's been doing coke and drinking Jack Daniels in the green room for the last 4 hours, and it's time for the main set. Like, you're on, and he's like, forgot the words to my song. That's what it feels like.
We are in trouble, Clay, my brother. Best to you and your dog. Go buy Clay's books. I love them. All right. We're not done yet. We'll be back.
Did any of you throw your rank on the table and say, hey, it's a bad idea to evacuate Bagram Airfield, the strategic air base, before we evacuate everyone? Did anyone do that? And when you didn't think to do that, did anyone raise their hand and say, we completely messed this up? Potentially all those people did die in vain if we don't have senior leaders that own up and raise their hand and say, we did not do this well in the end. I want to say this very strongly. I have been fighting for 17 years. I am willing to throw it all away to say to my senior leaders, I demand accountability.
And he did. He threw it all away. That was Stuart Scheller, brave Marine officer. There weren't many of them who did that. In fact, you can count them on one hand, but he did it. He gave it all up. But he's coming back, joining me now to talk about the military comeback. Wade Miller, executive director at the Center for Renewing America, Semper Fi. And of course, Chase Spears, former Army paratrooper, Afghanistan veteran. Chase, Stuart is coming back as a senior advisor to the Department of Defense. I like a lot of what I see. In fact, I like about everything I see right now as it pertains to the new military we're going to have.
Thanks for having me back on, Jesse. I share that encouragement with you. This is a wonderful reversal when you look at guys like Stu Scheller, when you look at guys like Matt Lohmeyer, when you look at guys like Pete Hegseth, our new Secretary of Defense, who was also persecuted for having just basic traditional Christian worldview belief. It's wonderful to see these guys who were treated ill when they were in uniform, basically for speaking the truth, for speaking the things that people in uniform should have been saying, for saying what generals should have been saying. They were cast aside, and it's a new day, and it's wonderful news for the Department of Defense to bring these leaders back, not just at the tactical and operational level where they were before, but now working up at the strategic level, steering policy, giving directives. These are men who have the scar tissue, they know what it feels like, and they know what needs to be done. And so I'm very excited about these announcements, and I hope to see a lot more just like them.
Yeah, me too. Wade, Pete Hegseth has been out there saying a lot of wonderful things. Music to my ears, I know music to yours. Here was some of it.
Someone who'd served in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Guantanamo Bay, holding a riot shield outside the White House, I'd been identified as an extremist. Someone unworthy of guarding the inauguration of an incoming American president. And if that's happening to me, Senator, how many other men and women, how many other patriots, how many other people of conscience? We haven't even talked about COVID and the tens of thousands of service members who were kicked out because of an experimental vaccine. In President Trump's Defense Department, they will be apologized to. They will be reinstituted with pay and rank. Things like focusing on extremism, Senator, have created a climate inside our ranks that feel political when it hasn't ever been political.
Wade, can we put Humpty Dumpty back together again?
I think so. I don't think it's too late. I think that there is a lot of damage to overcome. Some of it has been years in the making. But, you know, I've been investigating and researching woke and weaponized topics for a number of years now. And I am very encouraged by the incoming team and the conversations I've had with them at how serious they are about getting the military back to focusing on lethality and not these leftist agenda items that are masquerading as, you know, serious ideas, you know, like DEI and anti-racism, which isn't actually about, you know, opposing racism and all of these other equity-focused agenda items and white supremacy and domestic extremism. They're now going to focus on defending the United States of America, and that's not going to happen overnight. And they're going to be methodical about it. But I'm encouraged by what I've already seen. I think in the coming weeks, you're going to see Secretary Hegseth make a lot of moves that I think are going to be welcomed by those of us who are serious about national security and getting our military back in fighting shape. And I think it's an exciting team. If you're in a time, if you're a veteran, to see the military going back in the direction that it needs to be going in, and that we've all known, especially if you talk to sergeants across the military, they've all been saying this for years. And of course, colonels and generals have mostly been quiet about it because they want to get their next promotion. But we finally have a secretary who is a secretary for, you know, the enlisted man and woman who's going to be fighting for the reason that they chose to serve, which is because they love this country and they want to defend it.
Chase, let's talk about the officer corps. Let's talk about, well, specifically the military academies, these revered institutions. They have been poisoned all the way down to the roots as well. How in the world do you start to clean that gunk out when people are learning about diversity and queer theory at freaking West Point? Where do you begin?
The military academies, Jesse, unfortunately reflect the reality of what we've seen across the officer corps. My last job was in the U.S. Army's Combined Arms Center. I also did a final stint at Recruiting Command, very officer-heavy headquarters, and you see these theories promulgated throughout. And so it's going to take a concerted effort. I'm pleased to hear that we can expect to see several generals who soon become civilians, but that will not be enough. As I was telling Matthew Lohmeyer when I was on a town hall with STARS the other day, the reality is this cancer is deep. The Biden administration drilled this in deep throughout the officer corps all the way down to the company grade level. And it's going to take the same initiative to rid that cancer that it did to take it in. We're going to need to see commanders who are willing to train this, repeat it, and hold people accountable. We're going to need some people made examples of. Just like we have annual trainings that push this DEI crap into the military, we need to have much more frequent trainings pulling it out. And commanders are going to have to prove to their troops through actions, hey, it's safe now. You don't have to call people like Reframe a ma'am and worry that you're going to get in trouble for it anymore. You can now be a regular American serving your nation, acting patriotically, defending the Constitution, and not have to live in fear because of that anymore.
Speaking of making an example of people, this lady, Commandant, former Commandant of the Coast Guard, Linda Fagan, or Fagan, I don't know how to say her name, here she was.
We currently have nearly 40% women enrolled at the Coast Guard Academy. I'm really excited about the talent and the diversity that I see coming through the academy. My daughter is in the Coast Guard as a lieutenant, and there is just nothing but opportunity for her and all of the men and women that have joined the service. I'm really excited about the future as we look ahead.
So that's one commandant down. Ms. Fagan can go back to the civilian world. Wade? How many others have to go?
Well, you know, we'll defer to the leadership team of Secretary Hegseth, but, you know, one that comes to mind, General C.Q. Brown, he's the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He wrote a memo literally saying that one of his objectives was to have less white officers, essentially setting forth a racial quota system that he wanted to implement. I think that type of, you know, leadership is toxic, and it's frankly should be a violation of the law. And anyone who's been espousing that type of overt racism should be let go. I think that it's a bad command environment to have someone like that leading the military. And so I'm hoping that we'll see soon that names like that are included.
Chase, you wrote an article, a good article for Red State, called "It's Time for Conservatives in the Military to Fight." What are you talking about, and what's your plea to the enlisted guys there?
My plea, Jesse, is for people that are still serving right now in the ranks to understand this fight for the military, for the nation, is not just one that is the responsibility of our civilian policymakers. Now, to be clear, it is the responsibility of our civilian policymakers. It is the responsibility of voters. It's the responsibility of veterans. It's the responsibility of you and me. but it's also the responsibility of those who are currently in the ranks. I've talked to so many people in the ranks over the last few years when I was still on active duty and now that I'm a retiree, who've said things like, look, we're conservatives. We believe the things that we see you saying. We believe in constitutionality, but we dare not say this out loud because we might get in trouble. Well, that's what people who are willing to stand guard for the nation are willing to do. They're willing to take those chances. How are we going to call ourselves warriors and say that we're willing to go stand between the enemies of the nation and a bullet if we won't stand between a slide and our troops when it comes to indoctrination? So my plea is not for people to rise up in the ranks. My plea is not for any discontent or any breakdown of discipline. My plea is this: obey lawful orders, report unlawful orders, report those who give you unlawful orders. Be willing to stand against the lie. As Solzhenitsyn said, let the lie come, but not through us. And for too long, conservatives in the ranks have sat on their hands and said, it's someone else's problem. I'm afraid. The tide has turned. It is now time to say, the lie will no longer come through me. I'm not going to participate in this through inaction or action.
Wade, wrapping things up here, how do we handle the defense contractor cabal? I mean, we do need defense contractors. We need people designing and producing wonderful new weapons to give us an edge. But what we have now is gross. It's corrupt. I mean, it's not going to work long term. How do we fix that?
Well, I think we need to audit and review that entire process, including, by the way, I think that we need to have affirmations that subcontractors aren't participating in things like DEI and other systems that would be deemed, you know, a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, for instance. Start with that process. And then I think through a streamlining of reorienting our mission, I think you start cutting down certain contracts and figuring out what's actually in the best interest of the United States of America. And, you know, fortunately, we have a good team, a good defense team going in there. We will have a good OMB team with Russ Vogt and others at OMB. And so I think that the combination of those two, OMB and DOD, that are really serious about getting this country back on track and getting rid of all the grift and the corruption and the wokeness and the weaponization, I think that you're going to see a transformation. I think that this last point is really important, and this is the crux of it all. Pete Hegseth isn't going there to get a board seat at, you know, McDonnell Douglas after this, like so many mm-hmm. secretaries of defense before him. He's going there to change the entire institution. And the fact that he's not there for post-DOD career money-making, I think, is the biggest difference that you'll see between this Secretary of Defense and almost every other Secretary of Defense we've had in recent times. And I'm really looking forward to that difference, and I think it's going to be a night and day change.
I think so. Gentlemen, as always, appreciate you. All right, we'll get it fixed, and we'll be back. Hang on. A major war is coming. I know that sounds dark, and it is dark, but it is coming because history says it's coming. I don't know who it's going to be with. We all think, oh, that's going to be China or Russia, but I don't know. And I don't know when. I don't know if it'll be next month. I don't know if it'll be 10 years, 50 years from now, but it is coming. We know that. And we here in the United States of America have been so blessed that we just kind of, we don't look at those as ominously as we probably should. We look at those as if we've always won those major engagements. Well, we'll come out on top. We're America. But that is not a given. And the entire history of the world is full of empires as they start to fade, thinking their invincible military couldn't be beaten, find it beaten, and find themselves in a shocking position. And that is coming for us, unless we get things reformed and changed in the military and in a hurry. The rot has been deep, and it's been getting deeper by the day. We have got to fix that. Let's hope we're going to dig in. It looks like Pete Hegseth's going to dig in. Fingers crossed. All right, we'll do it again.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.